I'm Mike Sklens, and this is Nintendo World Report's Connectivity Podcast, episode 153, in memory of Michael Jackson. We have three segments for you this week. First up, Alex and Addison are joined by CJ Brown of the Player One podcast for a listener mail segment. And after that, myself, Scott, and Zach break down your and our favorite water level tracks in video games. And then finally, we have a bonus segment on Danganronpa 2. Enjoy the episode.
Hey everybody, and welcome to a brand new segment of Nintendo World Report Connectivity. I am your host, Alexander Kalafi, and joining me for a brand new edition of Listener Mail, Addison Webb.
Howdy.
And a very special guest this week. We have Christopher C.J. Johnston of the world-famous Player One podcast. Hello, C.J.
Hey, how's it going there, Alex?
Fantastic.
Thanks for having me on, by the way.
You know what?
This is great. I've been a Connectivity listener for a long time, and this is the first time I've been on the show. This is awesome.
It in the famous wise words of Rich Grisham, it feels like I'm jamming with my favorite band.
Well put.
Cool.
It basically has gotten to the point, though, thanks to the telethons, the RFN, the hanging out with us at PAX East, and now Connectivity, that you are more or less an honorary member of Nintendo World Report now. I'm sorry.
That's all right. I can deal with that.
Sure. I know how much you hate Nintendo.
Obviously. Of course. Yeah. Yeah. Can't stand them.
So for listener mail this week, we have two tweets and two emails. This sounds compact, but both emails are so crazily substantial that we will still probably end up clearing a half hour easily by the time we are done. So let's get into it. The first tweet comes from Third Rate Minion at Third Rate Minion. What do you think the other amiibo will be, or do the other, or for the other games announced? I guess Captain Toad, I think, was announced to have it. I think Mario Kart was, Mario Party 10, Smash Bros., obviously, and a small handful of other games. So I guess starting with you, CJ, what do you think the future of amiibo is going to be like after Smash Bros. Comes out, and now we're left with Nintendo Skylander platform to stand on its own?
I mean, in a lot of those games, right, they're Captain Toad is a single player game and Yoshi is a single player game. Like, maybe other than giving you hints, I'm not really sure what sort of functionality they're gonna have.
Sure.
There. Happens when you put a Link statue on Captain Toad? Is Link gonna show up in Captain Toad? That would just be a little strange.
It would be fucking wacky is what it would be.
Yeah.
Hey, they both can't jump, so that would work.
Yeah.
What I'm thinking is, I'm guessing not everything will be compatible with everything, especially for things like Mario Kart, that becomes way too ridiculous and unwieldy to handle, and especially for Smash Bros., if a Toad amiibo comes out and there is no Toad fighter to speak of, especially in the wake of Sakurai saying that it takes like a year to come up with a character.
You know what would be interesting, though? Like, let's say you did, like, a sort of Monster Rancher thing. I don't know if you remember Monster Rancher for the PS1, where you put an audio CD into the PlayStation and it would read it and give you a character. Yeah. I wonder if they could do, like, something where, okay, you put the Link statue on when you're playing Captain Toad and it gives you, like, some kind of Zelda-themed item in the game, but it's not like Link is going to show up, but...
Like a costume.
There's something extra for you, if you have it.
Yeah.
That could be cool.
I think one thing I'm very curious about is whether let's say there's the Mario one for Smash Bros., the Mario amiibo we know for a fact is coming out. I wonder if that one will also work on Mario Kart, or if we have to wait for the Mario Kart wave, where there's a Mario Kart on a pedestal, and we have to spend $24 for what may actually be an afterthought feature.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's, I think, you know what? I am excited that this is probably the craziest thing I've seen Nintendo try to do in a super long time. I mean, it doesn't seem so crazy, thanks to Toys for Bob and whatnot.
Yeah.
But for Nintendo to go, like, headfirst into this, Toys to Life thing, this could turn out really incredibly for them.
Absolutely. Like, in Mario Kart, what if it was, carts that looked sort of like NASCAR cars, where they have logos on them, so you could put like the Kirby figure on there and get like a Kirby themed vehicle. That'd be pretty cool.
Yeah.
or a Wii Fit vehicle for the trainer. I'd be down for that.
I kind of like the idea of alternative amiibo uses. Like, just because it's Mario doesn't mean Mario has to be in the game. Maybe it can just be Mario's special cart or Mario's special Toad costume.
Yeah.
Did you have anything to add, Edison?
Well, with amiibo, I think the game that probably would have been the coolest to do amiibo with, at least in my opinion, sorry, come and gone, that's Hyrule Warriors. That game could have had so much amiibo potential. I mean, personally, I would just be opening up my wallet and just say, Nintendo, take all my money. I'll buy everything. But
I mean, that's that game, they couldn't patch it in, right?
Yeah, that's true.
It's Omega Force.
I'd love to see like a Zelda set. Like that game is just so zany and crazy to begin with. I just felt like that might have been the perfect test ground for this. But well, we can only hope that there will be some sort of amiibo. Probably costumes would be the only thing I could think of that they would do with that, but it's just one of those things where I feel like where they could really benefit from is they had some sort of like download title that was kind of like the toy box from Disney Infinity.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe do something with that with like Mario Maker.
Yeah, I like that. I like that a lot.
Yeah, I mean, not to bring too many parallels to PlayStation Home, but the idea of a persistent Nintendo-like world for just your amiibos to live in and for you to explore creatively just something that's always on the Wii U and eventually on the 3DS, almost like Miiverse, but it's super interactive, that, I don't know if it would sell Wii U's, but I think that would be a cool bullet point.
Or like a Mario Craft, like Minecraft type thing where you use the amiibos. Like something like that.
What a fuck you that would be to Microsoft. Yeah. Nintendocraft.
Yeah.
Is Minecraft popular in Japan?
That's a good question. Mm. And as we talk about the second email, the second tweet, I'm probably going to do a quick Google and report back. But specifically, moving on to that next tweet, the second comes from Pete Lopez. That is Pete_L0PEZ. Name a game you have purchased more than once. For myself, I bought in A Link to the Past 4 times. One Super Nintendo, 2 Wii U VC, and 1 Game Boy Advance. For me, it's been mostly games that when I was dumb and, well, younger, dumber, and stupider, I don't know why I use two synonyms, but GameCube games. I sold a lot of them to GameStop, and eventually, when GameCube games became super cheap a few years ago, before they became super expensive again, I rebought a lot of my favorite games, like NBA Streets, the Def Jam games, even some of the Nintendo games, like Luigi's Mansion. But, CJ, you've been in this game for a long time, so I feel like you might have a tale or two.
What do you mean? I'm still young, I'm still dumb, and still stupider. When it comes to this stuff, too.
But also nearly twice my age.
Hey, that's true. Oh, no. yeah, I've bought plenty of games multiple times. If you wanna count VC stuff and re-releases, you know, Link to the Past. I bought that on GBA, Super Nintendo, Wii Virtual Console, and Wii U Virtual Console. Earthbound I have on the Super Nintendo and the Wii U Virtual Console. But I mean, basically almost everything Nintendo has put out, I've bought multiple times. Like, sure. You can pretty much go through their entire catalog, and I'm bad with that stuff.
Do you own any double physical copies of anything?
Double physical copies for the same system? I don't think so. Well, yeah. Wait. Dr. Mario on the original Game Boy.
Mm-hmm.
Because if you recall, this was before we had download play on the Nintendo portable systems, and when the original Game Boy came out, you could link up and play against another player in Dr. Mario, a game that I totally love still to this day. And the other person had to have a copy of Dr. Mario, and that was pretty rare that the other person would have it. So I bought two copies in order to guarantee the person I wanted to play against would have it.
That is dedication.
Burnout.
Because I was in my teenage years, I was on the swim team for like the park district where I lived, and so that would be a lot of waiting around for your events to come up. So there would be a lot of Game Boy playing during that. So had to have an extra copy of Dr. Mario so that I could challenge people.
Addison, you are a collector. In fact, you recently did a weird, almost pilot, but also huge-ass segment with Justin Berube about collecting a bunch of shit.
Yeah.
I assume you have a couple tales of this, too.
Yeah, I've got several games that I've purchased multiple ways. Link to the Past, I've had the original SNES cart, the Player's Choice SNES cart, the Super Famicom cart, and on both Wii and Wii U virtual consoles. So, I own Zelda 2 a couple of ways.
Now why? If I can ask a question here, with Link to the Past, you have the American cart and the Japanese cart. At what point did you say, "Oh, I'm gonna also collect the Japanese versions of these as well"?
It's just that game, just because
you just love the game.
Zelda freak. Yeah, it was. I saw it at a convention I was at. Somebody was selling it for not too much, so I was like, "Hey, I'd be fun to
plus
play
that box
and
art
see
is
what
great
the,
too, right?
Yeah, see what the differences are." But there's not a whole lot. The opening screen's kind of lame compared to the American one. It just kind of like pops up, and this is like Zelda, and it has Triforce of the Gods in Japanese. I would say Warlords for the Atari I own several ways. Dracula's Curse I have on both virtual consoles, 3DS, Wii U, and cart. Symphony of the Night I have on a bunch of different download services, and I have the physical disc.
That is kind of... Well, I guess it's not crazy. I think the craziest thing about your story is that you bought one virtual console version and then bought another. Like, even Wii U and 3DS.
Well, I do that all the time.
Yeah.
I'm aware.
Alex, that is what is being called a true Nintendo fan.
Yeah, man, that's... come on.
Nintendo style of cross-buy. Just fucking buy it twice.
Just do it.
If you count Pong as a title, I have that in incredibly different ways. I have an Odyssey 4000 in here. Got like a Sears Pong set. I have like an Atari 2600 Pong. Bunch of stuff with that.
Nice.
Yeah. Oh, reason why I bought it on both virtual consoles is so I could do video capture without having to get a 3DS capture card.
That actually makes a lot of sense because you do quite a bit of the streaming.
Yeah, that's right. And we're doing a Castlevania a month thing on the site, so that was one of the games I wanted to talk about since it's my favorite of the NES trio.
Sure. I guess we should move on to our next email then. Great answers. Our next email comes from Hiawata. Imagine a new Wii U. It would have a faster processor and a more powerful specs in general than the original. Just like when comparing the 3DS to the new 3DS, the new Wii U would have faster navigation through its menu screens, Miiverse, eShop downloads, and internet in general. By the way, does the new 3DS achieve this solely through having a faster processor, or does it upgrade from wireless N to AC? That is a good question. I have no idea. The new Wii U would be completely compatible, but like the new 3DS, there are some things that would only be playable on the new Wii U, and then he's talking about the gamepad, better battery, and then maybe an exclusive game patched in, and then full 2 gamepad support. Which he also makes the point that if anyone keeps the old Wii U and buys a new Wii U, they would end up with 2 gamepads in the process. But I, considering he has this whole idea for a new gamepad, you know what, his whole thing, he basically has his own little plan for the new Wii U. So to this, I ask you guys, would you be interested in a new Wii U, considering we are not even 2 years into the Wii U, and considering that it took the 3DS 4 years by the time it ends up coming in North America next spring, surely. CJ, would you be interested in that?
No.
Not yet.
I am actually interested in like a revised gamepad. I think like a gamepad pro that's a little smaller would be kind of nice to have. And I don't know, for systems that aren't portable, things like load times, you know, especially since Nintendo has cut that down quite a bit since the Wii U launched, that isn't like a huge concern to me. And better graphics and a better processor, again, is like, well, I think the games on the Wii U look pretty great now.
Yeah.
Like, I'm not complaining about that. So the purpose of maybe a faster processor, better graphics would be to get some multi-platform games on the Wii U. But the multi-platform games that have already appeared on the Wii U have not traditionally done too well. So I don't know that better graphics would help that case. So,
yeah.
So a bit of a half yes, half no on that.
This also seems like a really poor business decision on Nintendo's part. Because imagine if you released a new Wii U 2 years after the system came out.
Mm.
Not only would that segment the user base way too early before the Wii U has even proven its potential, not only would it make a lot of consumers lose faith in the Wii U, considering they're already, at least from some perspectives, new moving on to the next thing so early, but who would want this who doesn't already have a Wii U? Like, I don't know who this would be. No one is waiting for the Wii U. Okay, maybe a few people are waiting on the Wii U to become PS4-level graphics and have a bunch of games with PS4-level graphics, but it still wouldn't have that many games with PS4 graphics because it's the new Wii U, and it would end up supporting a new port of Super Smash Bros. Brawl or very select new games that have slightly increased power. I don't know who would want this who's not already a Nintendo fan.
Yeah, I agree.
Yeah.
What do you think, Addison?
I definitely don't have a need for that at all. It's just kind of like all the stuff that's come out on the Wii U, like I've been perfectly fine with how it's performed. I mean, Hyrule Warriors looks great, plays great. Couple of slowdowns, but it's not anything I would get a new system over. I mean, Mario 3D World and Donkey Kong Country Tropical Freeze all look amazing. So I think with the art direction of the first party games, it's the hardware is sufficient for me to be satisfied with the experience. And also, I mean, with getting third party support, I know you guys both have other systems and I have an Xbox One, so third-party stuff that would come up multiple platforms I'm going to be playing on the Xbox One.
Yeah.
Yeah. I just think it's telling. You know what? I'll tell you if you want it. This is a very thought-provoking email, and it is interesting to think of what would happen if the Wii U became another system so early into its life. But it is kind of telling when CJ, a super huge Nintendo fanboy, and two people who write for a Nintendo enthusiast website, is just like, no fucking way.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I could go for a new gamepad, though. I remember there was like a patent that showed up with like interchangeable controls. That would be nice because I don't like playing NES games on the gamepad at all because you have to do like the SNES-style controls, and I like having the parallel buttons for those NES games. So to be able to like adapt it to some of the virtual console and like maybe even add like analog triggers too, they could play some GameCube games, stuff like that might be neat.
Yeah, or maybe even increase, I don't know if it's possible, increase the wireless range so you could
that'd be good.
Go further away with it too. That'd be cool.
Yeah, that is kind of crazy how like, you know what, I'll admit it, I've tried taking the Wii U and the Wii U gamepad into the bathroom before, and it just does not, like, work from 20 feet away.
Come on, Nintendo, I need access in all my bathrooms.
And then even if I have my Wii U in the living room and I want to play the gamepad in my bedroom, which is probably 40 feet away, it still won't do anything. Like, it cuts out probably by 15 or 20 feet. And, like, I'm not saying that's crazy unacceptable. It's cool that this is a feature to begin with, but there is so much room for improvement.
Yeah, totally.
Yep.
Battery life.
Battery life, too. The Wii U gamepad does need probably a twice as good battery.
Yeah.
Did you guys get the expanded battery pack
that
Nintendo was offering?
They're sold out when I tried to get one. So I got this like Nyko attachment thing that you can pull on and off. I mean, it works okay.
Yeah, the I was able to order, like, as soon as that thing went up, I was ready to order it.
Because
the gamepad battery life kind of sucks, and it's been really great with that new pack. I like it. They could just put that in to like a new Wii U SKU, and it would almost be like a brand new system.
Yeah, make that stuff more available online, Nintendo. Like CirclePad Pro and all that stuff. It's just so difficult. I had to import my CirclePad Pro XL to get one.
Yeah.
Oh, I've always thought about the CirclePad Pro, but I'm so glad I waited for the new 3DS's little half nub. Like, I just couldn't deal with the fact of playing a portable with potentially twice the width.
Yeah.
So, moving on to our last email, a particularly huge one from Dan reads, "For your next user question section, when there's only two hosts, or you've run out of much better things to talk about..." Correct there. "Thanks for all of the varied conversations and shows you guys take the time to make for us. You're welcome, Dan." And that is from Dan from St. Louis, Missouri. He has about 20 to 30 rapid-fire questions. He says, "No thinking aloud, but I did take a quick peek, and there are a few of these that I do want to go into a tiny bit more detail on. But most of the time, yes, Dan, we will go rapid-fire, and we will try to think as little as possible about it." I think the way we should do this is CJ, Addison, me. Just because there's like, okay, so the first one's Mario or Luigi. So I would go to CJ, who says...
Mario.
Addison, who says...
Mario.
And Alex, who says... probably also Mario. Alright, so moving on to the next one. Melee or Brawl?
Melee.
Melee.
Fucking Melee.
Of course.
Iwata or Reggie?
Iwata.
Reggie.
I gotta go with the Reggie. Like, even though it is so played out and so self-aware, I still smile every time he says my body is ready. Although Iwata is, like, such a cute little businessman, he almost seems completely unaware of the situation, even though he's probably super smart in real life.
Yeah.
You know what? I love
both. I always wonder what he really thinks of Nintendo's position in the market. Like, I'd love to see just like a really candid interview with him. Like, what he had to have been thinking, like, right after the launch of the Wii U and you know, within these 2 years. Like, what is going through his head? It's crazy.
And then, like, Nintendo, like, yes, sometimes we don't see them as entirely self-aware of their situation. I wonder how self-aware Iwata is of the situation. Like, I wonder if right now he knows exactly what Nintendo's problems are on a reasonable level, and exactly what Nintendo's strengths are, and if he's just slowly playing to them in a way that's not reaching the mass audience. Like, I'm sure
he does, but he's not thinking like a Nintendo fanboy does. He's not necessarily thinking in that way.
Right.
Peach or Rosalina?
Peach.
Peach.
Peach, Rosalina, I practically despise, though that is for another day.
I think
day.
Most people do.
Except for the people who are so in love with her that she has basically become Nintendo's official waifu.
That's just weird.
If you go on any message board, there are Rosalina fanboys. And it's probably Rosalina, and I am pissing off so many people right now. But there are people who love the shit out of Rosalina, and it is so weird. And, like, they even play off the fact in weird fetishy ways about how she's a heavy character in Mario Kart.
Oh, gosh.
Oh, my.
Raccoon tail or cape?
Raccoon tail.
Cape.
Cape, I want to see what what's it called? New Super Mario Bros. Would do with a cape. Just how they would bring that back. Because, like, or even Mario 3D Land, because I wonder how they would play with the cape's weird abilities of making you float, and then also run over platforms at 90 degree angles, basically.
Yeah.
Hmm.
I'm old school Mario.
Mario just World's the older favorite. School, the better. Well, like, the older school starting from 3, the better.
Yeah.
3DS or 3DS XL?
3DS XL.
XL.
XL. Animal Crossing or Harvest Moon?
Animal Crossing.
Harvest Moon.
I also want to say Animal Crossing, and I'm not going to shit on your point or anything, but why Harvest Moon?
Harvest Moon 64 was just one of those games that I have such good like nostalgia for. I played the crap out of that back in the day. I love that game. So.
Mm-hmm.
Mm.
I've always wanted to give that series the attention it deserves because I always see it just compared to Animal Crossing, even though the games are supposedly much different. Like, I've always looked at that, the 3DS Harvest Moon, A New Beginning, it's called, mm-hmm. and I'm so close to buying it, but I need it to hit that $20 sweet spot on the eShop. Like, right now, it's, like, consistently 30 or 40, and I just can't deal with it. Mm. Have you tried Harvest Moon properly, CJ?
I've never played a Harvest Moon game, I don't think.
You're missing out.
I, you know, like you, Alex, I've always been kind of interested in the series, because
mm-hmm.
yeah, it is sort of cute, cartoony. There seems to be like a little bit more to it than Animal Crossing because you got the whole farming mechanic and you can marry in that game, I think, if yep. I'm remembering correctly, yep. and have a family and stuff like that. It sounds more involved than Animal Crossing, but I just haven't really found like an entry that feels right for me to jump in. I'm always playing something else at the time when Harvest Moon comes out. Where I'm like, ah, I'll wait on that. And then I just never jump in.
Yeah, it's such a one-day kind of game.
Yeah, one day I'll play that.
Navi or is it Fi or Fi? Okay. Navi or Fi?
Fi.
Ugh. Midna. Midna, but I would have to go with Navi.
I would probably go with Navi, too. Not because it's a good character, but because I don't really remember Fi that well. Like Fi was never even remotely the memorable part of Skyward Sword.
Right.
I think she popped up so often to tell you what you should be doing, and it's like, all right, come on. Be quiet.
Knock it off.
Yeah, I think
but at least she was like a, you know, a person, whereas Navi just was, you know, little fairy glowing light thing.
Telling you to listen.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Super Mario Bros. 3 or World?
3.
World.
3. But you know what? It's kind of close. Because even though I think 3 is a better design game, World is, like, brighter and not necessarily more fun gameplay-wise, but a lot more fun aesthetically and a lot more fun conceptually, I think. Like it does so much creative things with, like, the switches and the cape, mm-hmm. and just the color palette it uses is so much brighter than previous Mario games have been, that, like, I probably remember what World looks like way better than I remember what Super Mario Bros. 3 looks like, but Mario 3 is almost a perfect game. Like, I guess in my opinion, I'm sure, some people would disagree.
Until you get to some of those later levels where
the tanks
kind of diabolical with some of the difficulty there.
Like, a lot, the later parts of Mario 3 are harder than most of the indie games coming out today that pride themselves on being hard.
Yeah. Those last levels with all the, like, cannonballs just randomly appearing on the screen killing you. It'd be so mad. Freaking hate
now,
that
as
part
it,
of the game.
In my younger years, you know, I played a lot of Super Mario Bros. 3, and I had this, like, muscle memory of playing that game. So when it came out on 3DS Virtual Console, when it came out on the Wii Virtual Console, and I played it again, I just breezed through that stuff because I knew exactly what was coming. It was great.
Guess I'm not dedicated enough.
Metroids or Koopas?
Metroids.
Koopas.
Koopas. Though, like, I think of the Koopalings when I think of Koopas, and I kind of like the Koopa. Well, I don't like the Koopalings being used 7 times in Mario Kart, but I do kind of like the Koopalings as characters. But Metroids, when I think of Metroids, I just think of the one, like the Metroid that pops up at the end of Metroid. But you know
Super Metroid? or the original Metroid?
I've only played through the original Metroid in Zero Mission. What? I have the Wii U. I have the Wii Super Nintendo game, but I just couldn't get him to crawl. I couldn't get Metroid to crawl.
It's not worth playing.
What?
I'm the resident Metroid hater. So.
Oh man, Super Metroid's great. That is a fun game.
Doctor Who or Dr. Dre?
Dr. Dre.
Yeah, Dr. Dre.
Only one of them came out with the Chronic. So, in my opinion, Dr. Dre beats Doctor Who. Let me see. I got so carried away with that Beats joke that I actually thought about it for the last half hour, and I've completely lost track.
I like how all the questions so far have been video game related, and then Dr. Dre. No, like, no Dr. Mario or Dr. Luigi?
If it was Dr. Mario or Dr. Luigi, go ahead.
It'd still be Dr. Mario.
It's Dr. Mario, right, Addison? Yeah.
Yeah, those L-shaped pills, man. I wouldn't want to take one of them.
That would hurt to swallow.
Yeah.
Bowser or Bowser Jr.?
Bowser.
Bowser Jr.
I respect your decision, but I do choose Bowser. Jabba the Hutt or Jabu Jabu? Is Jabu Jabu the fish?
Yeah.
I think so.
It's the third dungeon in Ocarina of Time.
Okay, all right.
Jabba the Hutt for me. I, you know what? Empire Strikes Back is my favorite of the three.
I'm all about Jabu Jabu.
Yeah, me too. Addison? You don't find the boomerang inside of Jabba the Hutt.
Well, you might, but you don't in those movies. True. Couch co-op or online?
Couch co-op all the way.
Yeah, if you can find it, couch co-op.
I've never had a good memory playing online games that didn't involve me sitting alone in a dark room at 1 in the morning.
Yeah.
Captain N, the Game Master, or the Super Mario Bros. Super Show?
Oh, Captain N.
Super Show.
Super Show, because I have not seen Captain N.
Haven't seen Captain N?
What should
it's so deliciously terrible.
He's too busy hooked on the brothers for that junk.
Captain N is a lot of fun. That's a fun show.
Discs or carts?
Carts.
Yeah, definitely carts. Discs rot and they take forever to load up.
Carts, but I really prefer the DS cartridges best. Like, I like how just fucking simple they are, and how reliable they are. Like, you never have to blow on a DS cart, even if it is nostalgic. The DS cart is probably the ideal game cartridge mechanism for me.
Yeah, like the NES, it gives that satisfying little click when you put one in.
Oh, nice. Yeah. And especially how it bounces back up a little.
Yeah. If you're going to go physical media, you... Definitely. Cartridges just give you that nice, tangible feel. There's, a CD or a DVD or Blu-ray, that's cold. It's unfeeling.
All right, so we actually do have a bunch of these, so we'll move through some of these faster. Cecil or Chrono?
What game is that?
Cecil or Chrono?
Final Fantasy.
Oh, Chrono Trigger?
Oh, it's Final Fantasy IV versus Chrono Trigger.
Chrono.
Cecil.
Chrono. Tanuki suit or cat suit?
Tanuki suit.
Cat.
Tanuki. Ocarina or Majora?
Ocarina.
Majora, definitely my favorite game of all time.
Ocarina, I really want to play Majora one day. Zapper or Super Scope?
Zapper.
Zapper.
Zapper. Dead or Dead or Alive Beach Volleyball?
Beach volleyball, all the way.
Tekken ball.
So I've only played Dead or Alive 5, and man, it almost feels like Dead or Alive beach volleyball sometimes with those physics. Digital downloads or physical media? I know you prefer physical media, CJ, but what do you think, Addison?
No, I don't.
That's the poster child of the digital download future, right there.
If it's not a cartridge, then I'm all digital.
It depends on the console for me. With Wii U, I'm doing all physical. With the One and 3DS, I usually go digital, just out of convenience.
I almost always choose physical, except on the Vita, in which it's such a pain in the ass to put cartridges in that system. And it's just so much easier to buy games from the store. And also, because Vita games go on sale, like $40 games, go on sale for like $6 every week. Mm-hmm. So 90% of my collection by default is already Vita games, digital. Street Fighter or Soul Calibur?
Street Fighter.
Street Fighter.
Soul Calibur, and might I add, Soul Calibur 4. I am probably one of the few people who actually liked Soul Calibur 4 more than 2, not only because of the Star Wars characters, but just something about the way that game felt, like the weight that game had compared to the second one, just felt so right to me. In the same way GTA 4 feels right to me, because of the weight that is there when you handle your characters and your vehicles. I dropped 60 hours into Soul Calibur 4. Shantae or Mighty Switch Force?
Shantae.
Haven't played either of them, to be honest.
Neither have I. I have never liked a WayForward game.
What?
DuckTales Remastered, man. Awesome quality.
They make some great licensed games, actually. They do a really, really good job with that. In part because people have such low expectations for games based off of licenses, but they do good stuff. And they did that Contra game, I think, on DS, right?
Oh, yeah, Contra 4.
That was really pretty good. Yeah.
Hard.
Hard. Yeah. And even, like, the Shovel Knight guys are former WayForward folks. Yeah, WayForward, they do good stuff. Shantae is an interesting series. I totally understand why it never got as much play. Isn't for everybody.
Addison, this is your time to shine, but obviously starting with Chris, Zelda or Midna?
Which one?
Zelda or Midna?
Oh, Zelda, of course.
Oh man, this is hard. I'm going to say Zelda.
I was setting you up for you to talk about how much you love Midna, but you know what?
She's my favorite, person who bugs
annoying
you.
Annoying character?
Yeah.
Yeah, Zelda, obviously. Pikachu or Charizard?
Pikachu.
Pikachu. iPhone or Android?
iPhone.
Android.
Android. NES Max or NES Advantage?
Advantage.
Mega Man or Zero?
Mega Man.
James Bond or Joanna Dark? Who's Joanna Dark?
Perfect Dark?
Oh, okay.
I'm going to say Bond.
Bond.
Coins or stars?
Coins.
Well, if we're talking Mario Party, stars.
I'm thinking Mario platformers. I mean, it's cool that you're thinking Mario Party, but just thinking traditional Mario platformers, I'm thinking coins because of the sound they make when you get
exactly. them. Exactly. Exactly. You go into that room in a Mario game where it's just coins, and that's game on right there. Just jumping through, like, coins that are in the air in a Mario game is fantastic.
And then cleaning up afterwards.
Yeah.
Professor Layton or Phoenix Wright?
Layton.
Wright.
Wright, and in my opinion, it's not even close.
Yeah, agreed.
It's just, like, Phoenix Wright games are just so fucking funny. And just the idea of a lawyer game that is pulled off extremely well, it just clicks with me.
It's true.
Normal or inverted?
Normal.
Normal.
Normal. Blue shells or literally anything else?
If you're talking Mario Kart 8, blue shells are good.
Yeah, I'd say blue shells are alright.
I would say literally anything else. Because it includes everything else.
It could even include blue shells. No.
Well, anything. Well, maybe blue shell. Anything but blue shells.
Yeah.
And lastly, and Addison, I already know your answer, and I already know my answer. But CJ, I need to know. Connectivity or radio free Nintendo?
Oh, obviously connectivity.
Good answer.
Yeah. I was going to say RFN.
I listen to both. I can't choose.
Yeah, it's both shows are good. They do different things. Connectivity does multiple segments. RFN does a huge show with a consistent panel. You should listen to both.
Yes,
exactly.
And that will do it for our show this week. First off, I want to thank CJ for being such a tremendous guest this week.
Well, thank you very much for having me, Alex and Addison. This has been fun.
It has been super fun. Yeah. So tell us, CJ, where can we find you? Where can we find the things you do? And where can we find your podcast?
Well, I am at SuperPack on Twitter. That's SuperPac. Player One Podcast is the video game podcast that I host along with Greg Seward, Phil Theobald, and Mike Phillips. That's at playeronepodcast.com. And if you have an iPhone, why don't you buy or download some Adult Swim games for it? That would be a real help for me.
Adult Swim games, like, they, you know what? You guys have totally turned into this crazy indie publisher in the last few years. Like, you think about Adult Swim games, and you're like, oh, they must put out Flash games for C-Lab or some shit.
We did for a while.
No, you guys are putting out, like, stuff like Jazz Punk, really cool games that you're not going to find from any other publisher.
Right.
New one, what's it called, CJ? Sorry. I'm trying to throw in the plug and I'm failing.
Oh, for iPhone?
Yes.
We did, our latest release is called Adventure Express.
That's it. Express, I knew it was without AX. An E. Really fun. If you like the Match 3 and RPGs, I think this is my favorite out of all those types I've played so far. I think the RPG element's a little more present in this one, so totally check that out.
Cool. Well, thank you.
No problem.
And of course, Addison can be found on Twitter at RWEBBA. That is R, his last name, and then the letter A. And I am at Kulafia, my last name, and the letter A. Thanks so much, guys. That'll be all. Bye.
Yep.
Welcome to this segment of Connectivity. I'm Scott Thompson. Today I am with Mike Schlins and Zach Miller. And if it's the three of us on a segment together, you know that that means it is the return of the music segment.
Yeah, the untitled music segment.
We
really ought to come up with a name for this now that it's a regular thing.
Yeah, well, you fair listeners, send in your submissions for what you think the segment should be called. And we will say thank you on the air with your name.
Steal
which is,
this
I think,
segment.
Which I think is the best prize you can get. So, steal this segment? Is that like
steal this book?
What is that?
Or steal this album? It's a,
steal this movie?
Yeah.
System of the Down, right?
I think it was a book. Yeah. Steal this book, I think, was the first one to do that.
Well, but this is a music segment.
Yeah, I know. It was just,
made an SOD reference. That's what's important here.
That was like what, like their B-sides album or something, right?
Are we going to talk about Juggalos next? Okay.
What is a Juggalo?
I think there's a fair difference between System of a Down and like Insane Clown Posse.
Oh yes, but they do all. I mean, they do also share one thing in common in that they're not that really great at all.
Yeah.
No, I don't think System of a Down is great by any means.
But Insane Clown Posse, now they're fantastic.
Yeah. Now, if we're talking about like the pinnacle of music, then Insane Clown Posse. But what we're really here to talk about is the pinnacle of video game water levels. So if you remember, look at that segue. So if you remember from the last episode, which I guess was 3 weeks ago that we did our last music segment, we asked you, listener, to send in your favorite music track, from a water level. And we got a lot of submissions. I think this is the first week where I actively kind of cut some out. I didn't include everybody. So that's awesome. I mean, unless you didn't get picked, so sorry about that. But it's awesome that everyone's enjoying it and sending their songs. And in fact, a lot of you said nice things that you're enjoying this segment and everything like that. So we're happy to hear that. I know we're all enjoying it. So, you know, it's good you like it too. And we're not just doing this and you guys are like fast-forwarding through it. Yeah. Because if that's the case, we could just like not record this thing. We could just like listen to music all night. So, yeah, we're going to go ahead and start things off then with a pick from our own Zachary Miller. Zach, why don't you go ahead and introduce it?
So this is from one of my favorite Wii games. It's Endless Ocean Blue World. It's interesting. The soundtrack's interesting in that it's all done by a group called Celtic Women or Celtic Woman.
Celtic Woman.
Celtic Woman.
And very popular on the NPR circuit.
Yeah, exactly. And you'll be able to hear why. It's not like any music that I've ever heard in a video game. It sounds more like a movie soundtrack with, you know, that Enya did or something. But this particular track, have either of you guys seen the excellent but incredibly depressing movie The Mission with Jeremy Irons and the dude from Meet the Parents?
I have not.
No.
You should watch it with some tissues handy. But there is a this is, I think, where this song comes from. It's a totally different arrangement, but y'all should watch it. And then you should listen to this song and then listen to this much happier version of it.
Nice. All right. Well, let's go ahead and take a listen to that now.
Fantasy, are your friends?
All right, yeah. And we are back. Yeah, like Mike was saying as we were listening to that, but that is not at all like what I expected to hear when I clicked this link. That was from the second Ocean game. Okay, yeah, I messed around with the first one a little bit, but I didn't.
It's really serene. It's just, it's almost opera. It's not. It's a Celtic music, obviously, but it's almost right. It reminds me of opera.
Yeah.
But what I find like is kind of pervasive through most of the songs that are going to be heard in this segment. Not all of them. There's a few change-ups, but there's this quality, and I don't know why it is. I don't know if it's just the general nature of just sort of moving slower through water. But for the most part, these songs from water levels are all kind of slow and serene and very almost like, I guess, awe-inspiring.
Most of them are pretty ambient, too. They really have this.
Yeah.
They try and get this ebb and flow kind of sound going in them. It's
almost all of them have kind of an echo going.
Yeah. Yeah, there's a common language set between them all. Almost all of them.
For sure, yeah. So it's kind of fun starting with this one, which is like a fully arranged piece of music, and then now, you know, we'll move on to, something more like 16-bit or 8-bit even, and hear that still those themes kind of carry over. So let's go ahead and move on then. So this is something a little bit more modern. We're not getting quite to the chiptune-y stuff yet. But this is from Barry H., and he submitted the crashed ship theme from Metroid Prime.
There you go.
You know, this is a good one, and we'll listen to it here in a second before we really talk about it. But I feel like when people talk about music from Metroid Prime, it mostly focuses on the, what are they called?
Fengen Drifts. Yeah.
Which, that theme is awesome. But hearing this one made me, like, just kind of realize how great, really, the music is.
Oh, yeah, I totally forgot about this track.
And this is my least favorite area of that game.
Oh, for me it's the Phazon mines.
Oh yeah, those are pretty brutal too.
Like it took me like up until my third playthrough to finally like get past that and beat the game. I stopped there two different playthroughs. And never finished the game. Yeah. I know. I'm a monster. But anyway, let's listen to the crash ship theme from Metroid Prime. Yeah, so there you go. I think what I really like about that one is similar to the Endless Ocean song. You've got this serene, like, piano-heavy track, but I love that throughout they have sort of these, like, kind of like sci-fi sound effects in the background.
Noise,
you know,
that keeps going by.
Yeah, it's awesome. So it kind of blends this like undisturbed, environment.
That's a good way to put it.
It's very natural.
Oh, yeah, it's got this otherworldly scent, and it's really, really isolating. Like, it just makes me feel alone. Like, it just seems like no one would be around for hundreds and hundreds of miles.
Right, absolutely, yeah. It's very, like, natural, but then true to, Metroid in general, it has those sci-fi, tinges.
Yeah,
kind of
The only thing I would knock against this song is that this song it's on a GameCube game, and it's really, really repetitive. It's just a lot of songs, or not songs, because it's more of a track, so there's no words, but it really just feels like a really brief sample that's just played over and over again with some slight modifications. There's some other tracks that we're listening to that do a little more with themselves.
Yeah.
Yeah, and I feel like that's almost a result of it being... You know, I don't really want to call Metroid Prime like an open world game, but the fact that it's not so much like a controlled, like, okay, you're going to spend about 3 to 5 minutes beating this level. You know, I mean, you could really explore these environments for a long time trying to uncover everything. So it's something that does repeat, but it's in the background. You don't really notice
ambient,
it repeating because you're doing other things.
And
it's
also
not bad.
The thing I like is that the music is slow. It's a slow tempo because the first time you go in that underwater ship, you don't have a gravity your gravity suit, so you're moving very slowly.
Yeah,
it's like moving through molasses. It feels and it makes it the music fits that perfectly. It really feels like you're
exactly
moving in slow motion.
Yeah, absolutely. So good pick, Barry H. Good job. So this next one comes from Justin W. And I think this is one I was going to pick, and I know Mike, this is one you were going to pick. This is a straight up classic for sure. So this is Aquatic Ambience from Donkey Kong Country.
This is probably my favorite water track in any game ever.
Nice. Yeah,
It's got to be up there for me, all right, well, let's go ahead and listen to it real quick. So that is such a good song, and we were joking as we were listening, but it's fitting to have ambience in the game. Because it is very
ambient.
This
whole game was it came out in 94 and I was in like third grade, fourth grade, and it was like my introduction to ambient music pretty much.
I think it's telling like how great this soundtrack was, because it was one of the games that ended up having like a soundtrack that you could get through Nintendo Power.
Yeah.
I'm pretty sure. Wasn't DK Jams?
I remember that through the Super Power Club catalog.
Yep. Yeah, you could get it for either renewing your subscription, or you could pay some amount of money to get the soundtrack. And I don't think they did that with too many Super Nintendo games. I'm trying to think. I think Killer Instinct had a soundtrack. and a few other games, but it wasn't until like the N64 came around that like every main Nintendo game got a soundtrack. That
it wasn't something
Nintendo
you got
power.
Like back in the 8-bit, 16-bit. Like people weren't selling just video game music. It's pretty rare to see it come out, and it's a testament to how fucking good Donkey Kong Country's soundtrack is.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
I mean, you can buy one disc, and it's got this and Sticker Bush Symphony on it, and like, what else do you need?
Yeah.
Right, that is worth the probably what $25 they were charging for the CD at the time.
I mean, how else would you? I guess you'd have to hook your Nintendo up to like your tape recorder and like dub it onto a tape. Like, who's gonna do all that?
The aquatic theme in Donkey Kong Country 2 is a little more piratey, but I think it's
oh, that's a good one.
As good as this one in a different way.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And like we were talking about before we started recording, the kind of, it's not even really remix because it's very true to this, but it's a little bit different, or I guess a little bit more like kind of modern sounding. But the aquatic ambience from Donkey Kong Country Tropical Freeze is very, very good as well. So I recommend people check that out too. And like kind of like we were talking about related to Metroid Prime, which, you know, kind of loops a lot. I feel like this song changes a lot as it goes along. Yeah. I mean, as we were talking about, as we were listening to it, like at about a minute and 30 seconds, it
really kicks in.
You get like the introduction of more sounds and kind of you kind of get a more of a beat going to it, which is pretty cool. And I think reflects that, they wanted something sort of interesting that would, you know, last for the 5 or 6 minutes it takes you to beat the level or whatever. So, all right, well, let's go ahead and move on to the next one then. Now we're down all the way to 8-bit. This comes from Jeremy Holly, and this is the Area 5 theme from Master Blaster. I'll be honest, I hadn't heard this one before. I've never actually played Master Blaster.
Not good.
Wow. We're like probably terrible people. I bet there's a lot of people who are really
mad at us. Isn't it? That's a pretty beloved game, isn't it?
Oh, yeah, for sure. In fact, I think in his email he wrote when he sent it, he's like, I think he said something along the lines of like, well, this is a pretty obvious one, but, and it's
not
like, well, no, not to us, because none of us have played the game. So good pick, Jeremy. Let's go ahead and listen then to the Area 5 theme from Master Blaster. So yeah, now this is the first of the couple songs we'll hear today that sort of buck that serene, sort of ambient and reflective theme that all of these music tracks have had to this point. It's actually really upbeat.
Yeah.
And if I heard it without knowing it came from water level, I would never associate it with a water level. But you know, it is good. You know, for being an NES track, and it does kind of make me want to like sort of go back and play through this level now and see how the music sort of reflects what's going on in the level. Because it makes me feel like this level, even though it's underwater, must still be like rather like action oriented.
Yeah, I don't think there's really much differentiation, but I don't know.
I played the WiiWare remake, but I never got to an underwater level, so I couldn't tell you if they repeat. Yeah.
Oh, really?
That game's hard, man. The control scheme's kind of screwed up.
Well, there you go. So, yeah, maybe that I'll add that to my list of games to check out at some point. Is that on the Wii U Virtual Console?
Yeah, it is.
Oh, it is? Oh, wow.
The Wii U one? Oh, Wii U. Nice. I'm not positive. I think it's on the 3DS Virtual Console.
Oh, really?
I think so. Huh. But don't quote me on that. It's not a game I actively look for.
All right, fair enough. If nothing else, it's probably on the Wii Virtual Console, I would bet.
For sure.
Yeah, because I mean, the Wii Virtual Console got a lot of games. All right, well, let's move on to our next song then. This one comes from Daniel Lewis, and again, this is another track that sort of, I think, kind of breaks the mold. It comes from Rystar.
I think it's Rystar. I don't know, though. I never owned a Sega Genesis.
Well, even if you did, I mean, it's doubtful they said the title anywhere in the game. So, and the track is called Break Silence. Let's go ahead and give it a listen.
This one,
I think it's good too. I like that it does start off kind of slower and then suddenly just sort of kicks into this real kind of like, I guess what
it's kind of jazzy with the horn sounds kind of going on, and then it's I really like it. I like it. It kind of makes me want to like groove in my chair over here.
I like it too, because it's upbeat, but it's not like overbearingly so. Like, I think that Master Blaster theme was upbeat. And, like, a bit too, I guess, like, a bit too much was going on, you know, like, almost every NES
this track is really, like, brassy. Like, it's kind of, like, it's got this, like, sassy, brassy sound to it I really like.
Yeah. And, like, it's upbeat, but, yeah, it's still subdued in a way, kind of. So
it reminds
really
me
works.
Of, like, a cool dude walking down the street in the 70s.
Yeah, this would be like his pimp theme as he walks down the street. I got you.
Yeah, I feel a lot of it's got that. I don't know how to describe it, but it's just got that like trademark Sega Genesis sound to it from that sound chip in that console. It's just it sounds really unique. It doesn't sound like any other console. I love it. I've got a new appreciation of it recently.
Yeah,
it's really cool.
Yeah, I agree. We'll hear a little bit more Sega Genesis down the road here, but for now we'll move on to Sebastian Severio's pick. This was another one I thought of including, so I'm glad someone else did it, so I could pick another track. This one comes from Rayman Origins, and it is The Loom's Dream. This is a good one, and it's kind of interesting because it's, like, entirely vocal-driven.
Yeah.
Let's go ahead and give it a listen before we talk about it.
Ooh,
think, you know, when you hear that, not attached to the level or anything, it's actually almost kind of
It is kind of creepy. Yeah, it's a little unsettling. It's kind of uncanny because it sounds like they're saying words, but they're not. It's definitely gibberish, and it's not just French.
It's almost right. The beginning almost sounds like it. Like it sounds like they're saying "when I," and then like the rest is like
it
sort of indiscernible.
Sounds like Hawaiian gibberish.
Yeah.
All the sounds are those Hawaiian alphabet sounds.
Yeah,
but it's
very
got
good.
That minor key in it that I really like. It's not totally upbeat.
Yeah, it's interesting.
It sounds mysterious.
And I guess I've never played this game, but obviously it's a water level. But the title of the track is "The Lum's Dream," and it definitely has that kind of ethereal, dreamlike sound to it. I kind of almost associate it more with that sound than I do with a water sound. But I've never played the game.
It's a good game.
It's a great game. Both the games are really great, I think.
And in fact, Mike, you should just play the second game because it basically includes the entire first game.
Oh, nice.
That's true. Yeah. He's got a point there. But I think that one's really good. The whole game has really great music. But that's really fitting. And I can't remember, for some reason, I feel like there's levels where you're not entirely in water, so I feel like the music might be different when you're outside of the water, but it's when you jump in the water and go deep that track starts. For some reason, I feel like the music was kind of dynamic. Like, it wasn't the same thing, like, the entire way throughout.
Not.
It would
I'd
kind of change.
Check.
Yeah, I can't remember for sure, but I think that's the case. Because if you notice that YouTube clip we just listened to is only a minute and 20 seconds
and
long.
The levels are much
so that's
lower.
Why I think, like, it's a... Exactly. So that's why I think it's a very specific, like, part or, like, section of a level. Not the entire soundtrack to one single single level. So, yeah, but that is a good one. I have a feeling in these music segments to come, we will feature more music from the Rayman series, or I guess like relaunch, last two games, because they are so good. So speaking of music that sort of shifts dynamically as you're playing, this track comes from, well, Anonymous. That's his name on Twitter. I'm not sure if his actual name, but he follows me on Twitter. I follow him. And he's just listed as Anonymous, so there you go. He's not, like, the, like, hacker, like, spy network.
Or is he?
Or anything like that. Yeah, bum, bum, bum. So his pick was the beach level / underwater music from Super Mario 3D World.
I'm so glad somebody picked this.
Yes, this is really good. And as we'll hear here and hear here in a minute, this track has sort of this upbeat, above-water theme, and then does a really, like, awesome job of really subduing that theme. And incorporating it in this more like serene ambient
takes
underwater
it and drags
part.
It underwater. Neat.
Yeah. Which is, it's like literally what's going down on screen, and it does it with the music. It's so great. And it like will dynamically switch between them as you're emerging from the water and then going back under, which is really cool. So let's go ahead and give that track a listen.
Thank you.
You know, that underwater section actually, like, is really reminiscent of a track we will hear a little bit later to close out the show.
Oh. The first part of this track is so good. The clarinet and the horns. And it's just absolutely beautiful. It feels, I mean, it doesn't help. It doesn't hurt that they've added, like, seagull effects into the background. But it just feels like you're at the beach just listening to it.
Yeah, it's really great. I mean, the whole soundtrack to Mario 3D World is fantastic.
Yeah. I think this was my favorite level in this game. It's one of the ones I go back to play the most often, at the very least. It's really meaty, and it lets you do so much. You're running all over, you're getting these keys, you get the boomerang suit, and then you get to ride Plessy. Like, it just does everything.
Yeah. It's kind of like, I don't know really how to describe this soundtrack. Like, I think of, like, Mario Galaxy, and I feel like for that they went, like, I mean, they for sure went full out, like, orchestra. And the music was really epic, but this feels like really pulled back.
I like the soundtrack.
You know, there's not as many instruments.
Oh, go ahead. It's like super jazzy. The whole soundtrack is really jazzy, and I just love that about it.
Right. So it feels more, like a small jazz ensemble than this huge orchestra production like Mario Galaxy.
Yeah, it's weird. Yeah. It's always weird when I think of Mario's music and I think of how incredibly American the roots are for all of the music in the Mario games.
True.
It's like bluegrass, and jazz. Like, how did this make it into a Japanese platforming game about a plumber?
Yeah. Well, I guess since the plumber is supposed to have
It's so weird. It's the last thing you'd expect because most video games are like this, like actiony rock and roll kind of music with like MIDI guitars and all that stuff. And Mario's always just been, no, it's going to be like bluegrass and jazz. And you're gonna
And they've got the steel drums in this song that pulls me right back to Mario Sunshine.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
yeah, yeah. It's really good. And like for I'm impressed with what they do with the music in these games. And you know they'll have little nods to the classic Mario.
Well, yeah, there's
music,
some
but
clips
I'm always
and phrases
so impressed
in here that are very reminiscent of Yoshi's Island.
Yeah.
Right. But I'm always so impressed that they go through this effort to make these soundtracks for these games when they probably wouldn't necessarily have to. But I'm really happy.
Yeah, they put as much love and care into the Mario soundtrack as they do the Zelda soundtrack, and they're aiming for totally different things with those two, but they receive an equal amount of attention.
I mean, honestly, I think that
I agree.
There are very few Zelda songs, individual Zelda pieces that I know, but there are a lot of Mario songs that I know.
Yeah, they're very catchy. Yeah. They're almost all earworms.
Yeah.
Yeah, I would agree with that. So let's go ahead and move out then. We've got two tracks left, a pick for me and then a pick for Mike. This one, you know, I picked just to kind of spice things up because I had a feeling a lot of the tracks were going to be sort of the slower and more serene tracks like we talked about in the beginning. So I actually picked it's from Sonic 3. It's the Hydrosity Zone Act 2 theme. I think what I like about this one before we listen to it is I think it still echoes some of the basics of what makes a good like water theme, but it's upbeat and true to sort of the gameplay of Sonic. You know, even underwater, I mean, Sonic moves a little slower, but it's still very much about speed. And I think this song does a good job of sort of blending the two. And I don't think anyone can deny that like Sonic as a series has the best sort of panic music.
Oh, it's so good.
That like just like like for when it gets louder and then the countdown happens on the screen and it's just like pure panic. It's so good. So let's go ahead and listen then to Hydrosity Zone Act 2.
oddly enough, that I don't know why, but this seems like it wouldn't be out of place in one of the newer post-Symphony Castlevania games. I don't know really what it is about it. It's they've been getting a little jazzier, a little more excitable with the newer Castlevania games. Well, that they don't make anymore, but you know.
Yeah, those new games they don't make anymore.
Yeah.
Yeah, I enjoy this one. I do like the sort of jazzy elements, and I think you kind of hit like the, I guess you could call it sort of a chorus or a bridge, where you have sort of, I guess it's maybe supposed to sort of sound sort of like a guitar, but it's very like trebly and kind of like has some reverb to it, and that like reminds me of, or like feels to me like that's what they were kind of shooting for, to sort of give you that feeling of being underwater. It's like a little bit lighter and a little bit more ambient. Yeah. And I think that reflects to the stage, because if I remember correctly, the stage, you're like in water probably half the time and then like outside of the water the other half. So it kind of alternates between the two. Yeah, I just think it's very fitting. So, yeah. And as we learned before we started recording, for anyone who I guess doesn't know, you know, there's that huge like sort of rumor or speculation that Michael Jackson was involved in creating the soundtrack for Sonic 3. And in fact, the clip that we listened to at the top, it says like in memory of Michael Jackson, and then has his birth year and death year, I guess. Yeah, is what you would say. so yeah, supposedly he was involved in creating the soundtrack, but then they pulled his name from it because it came out that he was like maybe messing around with little kids. So they pulled his name and sort of changed up the music a little bit. But there you go. So
Shimon.
Yeah. and so for our final track, I think this one like almost like personifies
this is the track we told you not to submit last week because it was too obvious.
Well, this one, yeah, this one, and then the water track from Mario 1.
We actually, no one ended up. Yeah, I don't think we need to do the Mario 1 water track. Well, it's classic. I don't know if it's that amazing.
No. Right.
Just mainly it's a lot of credit for being like the first.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's true.
Not that it's bad. It is
great. But this one is great. And I think you can hear echoes of it in that underwater section of that Mario 3D World track that we listened to. Yeah. But so this is the Dire Dire Docks theme from Super Mario 64. Let's go ahead and take a listen.
With fuel perks from Harvey's, you'll never pay full price for gas again. Earn rewards on every purchase. For every $50 you spend, you'll earn fuel perk rewards when you use your rewards key. Start earning fuel perks today, only at Harvey's.
Thank you.
like an extended loop of this on YouTube where it just plays for like 12 hours.
when I Googled it, I found the very first choice was 30 minutes of an extended track. So that's close. Yeah, this one is really good. And Zach, like you were saying as we were listening to it, it's so simple. You know, like it, for the most part, it sounds like it's like what, like two or three quote unquote instruments, you know, like different sounds. And it works really well. And it kind of just brings together what we were talking about, like what makes a great music track. Just this sort of ambient, serene, subdued, just slower paced kind of track. And it really works.
Through, you get that little staccato beat going. And the overlying instrumental isn't all that different, but it totally changes the music.
The whole feel of it.
Yeah, this is a track that I could just put on in the background, and it's incredibly soothing.
Yeah.
You know what instantly comes to mind every time I hear this track? Were those awful, awful, like, water bugs in Super Mario 64? Like with the four legs, they almost kind of look, I mean,
the
not
skimmers,
spiders,
the water spider skimmers. Legs,
but yeah, exactly. Yeah. Who would just sort of float. Cause it was so hard to kill them. Cause you couldn't really jump out of the water to kill them. I instantly think of those monsters every time I hear this track. And like for being such a calm and like serene track, it just instantly fills me with rage. Like thinking about those stupid guys just, sort of like skimming around the top of the water there causing you.
Yeah. And I died a lot on, not on Dire Dire Docks, but on the later water level that's up higher in the castle where with has the lost city in it.
Oh, the one where the water level rises and falls.
And that uses the same music, doesn't
it? Blows. Yeah, it does.
Yeah.
Yeah, it does.
Yeah, I die on that one all the time.
Yeah.
Yep.
Well, the water controls, the underwater controls in Mario 64 are not great.
No.
Yeah, that's probably like I think Mario 64 still holds up pretty well, but the underwater stuff is probably the part that holds up the
least.
That stuff is kind of rough. It was one thing getting like movement in 3D down, but then to have like where you can also completely
move
up and down
3D space,
at will.
Yeah,
it just didn't work that well.
It didn't even really work that well, honestly, to me in Super Mario Galaxy.
I think it worked.
You know, I hear people complain sort of about swimming in Super Mario Galaxy. I didn't really have that much of a problem with it. But I will concede that it was difficult.
My favorite thing about water levels in Super Mario 64 is that if you're ever low on health, all you have to do is go underwater and come back up to the surface and you'll refill all of it.
Oh, that's true. Yeah.
Yeah.
Cause they just tied the oxygen to the health meter. They didn't do that in subsequent games, but that was the best. Even though I died a lot on that one level, it was, I guess, just because I wasn't smart enough to get back in the water and refill my health.
Yep. So there you go. Yeah, there are our and your favorite music tracks. Do we have a theme for the next time we do one of these? Anyone come up with
a favorite? I did one. I picked Mega Man, Scott picked, said we should do best water, so I feel like Zach should come up with our next category.
Yeah, best, what do you got, Zach? What do you want to do?
Music from a fighting game.
Oh, good choice.
Ooh, okay. Okay, I like it. Yeah. There you go. So best music from a fighting game, any generation, any console,
send it in, send it to connectivity@nintendoworldreport.com or just send it to us, on Twitter. That'd be fine too.
I had a couple people tweet me tracks.
Now hold on. Here's one important question though. Do we include Smash Brothers?
That's
I don't
fighting
think
game.
We should.
Yes. Yes,
no, we
absolutely.
Shouldn't because most of those tracks are just remixes of.
Fine. If you
other
pick a
Nintendo
track from
themes.
Smash Brothers, make it an original piece.
Yeah, make it.
Here's my feeling. Save Smash Brothers, cut it out, and we'll do Smash Brothers maybe the next time, leading up to like the release of the Wii U version, where we'll have like awesome, beautiful orchestrations of all these tracks. That'll like be kind of building up towards
that. Idea.
We'll do like favorite Smash Brothers remixes and arrangements. So, but no, for now, no Smash Brothers in this one. Just do just do your favorite fighting game.
If you email it in. If you want to put your Twitter handle on your email, we'll read it out. Maybe you'll get a follower. I don't know.
Yeah, you'll get that connectivity bump.
That connectivity. Yeah, I love that.
So there you go. All right. And I guess real quick then, if you want to follow us on Twitter and send us your favorite music or just, talk to us. I'm OK Soda. The letter's OK and the word soda. Mike, what's
yours? At Striker Obi. Obi-I like Obi-Wan Kenobi.
At Striker Obi. There you go. And then, Zach, yours is what? Z Miller.
1902, the year T-Rex was found.
Z Miller.
No, I always forget that, and then you say it, and I'm like, oh, of course.
Of course. All right, there you go. So we will see you in a few weeks then with the best fighting game tracks.
Yeah. Adios. Bye. Bye.
Thanks for listening, and I hope you enjoyed this week's episode. Don't forget, you can send your listener mail questions to connectivity@nintendoworldreport.com. We just answered a bunch, so we're going to need some more. And if you've got a moment, please rate and review the show on iTunes. Now stay tuned for a bonus segment about Danganronpa 2.
To a very special spoiler segment for Danganronpa 2 and 1, as it turns out. I am your host, the ultimate bearer of despair, Donald Terriel, joined tonight by the ultimate watcher, Stephen Shook.
Hello! I'm watching you!
The ultimate cynic, Austin Parkin.
At last we meet, Tyler. The circle is now complete.
And the ultimate father, Tyler Olu.
Yeah, that's a good one. That's a good title. The young high school father, I guess, in this space.
Well, you never know. I've heard some things about the new one, but anyway, let's get underway with this thing. So, I will preface this by saying that Tyler did review the game at his website, stickitinyourpocket.com, one of the fine handheld reviewing sites that I trust, and. Tyler wasn't too impressed. Austin seemed to agree with him, which, if you know us, is kind of shocking. And as of October 1st, Danganronpa 2 is my game of the year.
Hey, you didn't talk about me.
Steven, that's because you didn't play it.
I avoided like the plague. Come on now, that's different.
Okay, well, you're going to find the story as stupid as we did then, probably.
All right, so, Tyler... Basically, what was the gist of it for you? Because you seemed to be satisfied with it, but not over the moon as with the first game.
Oh, that sounds like a Bayonetta podcast. No, I think the thing I can just nail it down to is the problem is as soon as you're critical of something, it sounds like you hate it, and I have my issues with Danganronpa 2.
I know nothing about that.
But I certainly don't hate it, and I just feel that its biggest problem is that its setting leads to just an overall disappointment. Like, it just carries throughout the game, wherein the first game was set in a school, and so, you know, there's just normally like, well, what's going to be weird about a gym room, and what's going to be weird about a home mech classroom, and then all of a sudden it's like, well, why is there this giant freezer, and there's just, it's a bit more mysterious because it's in a school, and... So that's what I liked about it, but with this island setting, this tropical getaway, it's just an excuse to be like, well, here's one weird thing, and here's one weird thing, and here's one, another weird thing, and there's no real... Then all of a sudden you stop caring about where you're going because you know it's going to be weird. And so I felt like that really damaged the flow of the story.
I like to note that the huge physics lab was not weird in the first one.
Yeah, incidentally, we should reiterate that this is a spoiler segment... So that we're going to be talking pretty liberally about the story changes in this. So, yeah,
it's all coming off, folks.
This is officially your last warning. If you are intending to play this, just stop the podcast right now.
I mean, I had a similar problem that Tyler did in that there was a mystery to the school exploring in the first game and just poking in, see what's hidden here. Just the way that it was laid out, even though there wasn't much to find, it felt like there was exploration that was worth having. In this one, though, the islands are so spread out that it takes forever to get anywhere unless you just kind of warp around. and that goes against leveling up your character, which hurts you in the trials. So it takes forever to get around the island, and when you get there, it feels like the places are specifically built for a specific type of murder there, and I felt that kind of took away from the murders as well. It's like the funhouse. The funhouse, literally, there is really only one place in that entire funhouse you could get away with murdering someone, and only one specific way, and that was indeed the way it was done.
The funhouse is screwed up as it is, and I'm not just talking about the forums, it was certainly a nice change aesthetically from having, you know, just a dark, dank school all the time where you're running around and getting motion sick. I thought the setting was nice just to give you felt like a little more room to breathe.
Yeah, plus the funhouse has the worst puzzle in the entire game.
Oh, come on, it wasn't that
bad. It was bad, but the solution to that light puzzle made no sense. Even knowing the solution, I went back and looked at it, and I couldn't see how they got to that conclusion. Because it doesn't match the cipher you're given.
Oh yeah, I know what you're talking about. It's really weird.
I have to confess, I dealt with that the same way I dealt with some of the trickier puzzles in Virtue's Last Reward. Thanks, GameFAQs.
Yeah, I had to go through it using YouTube videos, which turned out to be a bit of a mistake, because you're trying to skip around in YouTube videos, stuff did get spoiled.
Well, yeah, that would be a definite problem.
Now, because the setting didn't bug me very much, but I think the reason why it resonated with me is something that we've talked about previously with regards to Madoka Magica, the anime, that I really love it when stories go out of their way to subvert themselves and to swerve you with what they're doing. And I felt that this game had enough swerves to, you know, run a Formula One race on it.
Formula One E.
Yeah, I mean,
go electric here.
Yeah, I can kind of see that. Kind of my problem with that synopsis, though, is that the game tips its hand way too early. From the very moment that you awaken on the island, when they start doing the computer programming and glitching and stuff, you know that something's up. For the longest time, I thought your character was actually probably a cyborg. But then when they revealed that, oh, it's all one big computer program, I just felt that they made it too obvious that something wasn't right there from the beginning, that they could get away with that.
But it's just a game.
Yeah, and that whole sequence of dialogue kind of underlines a lot of the problems with this story in general. Just Teddy's, just Monokuma's constant repetition of, because it's a game, to every single hard question that was given to him. Yeah, it's just, and you know what, you know why this story isn't important? Because it's a game.
I think in the opening hours of the game, I think Nagato was like, of everything, as much as different aspects disappointed me, Nagato was like a really great character. I really liked it, especially when you started off and before there was like the twist where you're like, okay, this guy's messed up. It felt as if like you're like, oh, I'm playing a character who's not the lead character. This guy's the protagonist. This is the guy that wants us all to work together, and I'm the one who's kind of hesitant and freaking out. And I thought that was like really, really smart. And then when the twist came, it made things really weird. And he was just a really great character. And it's only until the end when you of course it's finally realized like just how interesting he was, but then he's gone and it's too late.
Yeah, it's kind of sad that he was such an interesting character, because so many of the other ones I felt were really shallow in one note. Like for example, Byakuya. The only reason you care about Byakuya is because you think he's the guy from the first game. There is absolutely nothing interesting about the one that's in this one. And you can say that about a lot of the other characters. You didn't, except for like, what's her name, the singer? I really liked her because I felt that she had this very cheery, demeanor about her that really worked in a lot of the scene section, Ikebi. But a lot of the other ones, like, yep, she is the gamer, solving everything through gamer logic. She is the medic. She is the photographer. She is the bitch. The little girl.
Yeah, you know, honestly, they could have killed her off. They could have swapped her and Mahiru, the photographer, their death scenes. I would have been way happier if they had done that, because yeah, she got no reasonable characterization aside from, oh, I'm a complete witch. Hyoko. And Mahiru, I think, was going to get somewhere, but then she got, well, she was the victim because of killed by the backstory.
Yeah. I kept waiting for the mechanic to turn evil because they kept drawing him in this very Helsing Ultimate style grin everywhere. And that was the one thing I thought really worked, is that, no, he just turned out to be really, really enthusiastic.
Gundam was someone who I was just, I was always like, okay, he's going to be next to go. He's going to be next to go. I really did not like that character. There was nothing about him that I thought was interesting. And it was like, I guess a big part of it was that I really couldn't pin down what his deal was and the way he spoke. Like, I don't really, a lot of them are like built from stereotypes or just weird characteristics, but his, I'm not familiar with what it was supposed to be. I'm like, is this supposed to be like D&D or is it like a goth guy? And it was like super all over the place and I just couldn't pin it down.
He's supposed to be a ninja guy.
Really? Oh, it was so weird. It just seemed...
That's the scarf and his little ninja hamsters.
Oh, okay. It was just so much like dark arts stuff that I was like, I don't know what I'm dealing with here. And I didn't.
Yeah,
like
you see enough Naruto, you can spot that guy.
But yeah, Gundam's execution scene was actually brilliant, because all this dark arts stuff that he's doing, and at the end of the thing, he gets carried up to heaven by angels. I don't know if that was just Monokuma being a you know what.
I will say that is one thing I thought that the twist did work with. Is one of my big complaints about the first game is I thought that the executions were too ridiculous to be believable. And in this game, yeah, they were even more ridiculous, but it made sense because they were all fake. It was a video game. And that's why I thought made that work.
Was the first one a video game, maybe?
No.
So, so what happened to the world?
We'll find out in another episode.
Seriously? They're going to cock-tease that?
No, they've already released it. Danganronpa, another episode. It's the third-person shooter with the megaphone that they just released on the Vita in Japan.
Yeah, but did that actually tell what happened to the world in the first one?
Yes. I mean,
that's the only thing somewhat interesting about that one.
Yeah, because they're running around the ruins of the world. They're fighting Monokuma bears.
Because basically, the end game is that they're trying to that the characters who survive from the first game are trying to rebuild the world after the most tragic, awful event in the history of mankind.
That's apparently not the Holocaust.
They released,
or slavery.
William Shatner got another CD.
No, that's wrong.
Are you sure? Then this wasn't the most tragic event in the whole world, then.
Incidentally, was it just me, or was Akane pretty much just a stand-in for Aoi from the first game? Because she has almost the exact same build, she has a very similar ultimate profession, and she's just as stupid.
Which one's Aoi?
She's the gymnast.
Red sweatpants, big boobs, in the little scene where they have, hey, we're all stuck here, we're gonna have kids.
Yeah, it's her, but with long brown hair instead. Because
do another one of those?
No, they don't. Instead, they show underage girls in the shower if you have a correct item in your inventory.
They did that in the last one too.
Yeah, but one of the underage girls didn't look like she was five.
With all the similarities to the first game, I really wish I would have picked up on the almost like Metal Gear Solid 2 vibe that it was giving me, and then I would have been able to piece things together much sooner. But I was just like, oh, it must just be some weird thing where they're having weird nods, especially when Nagito referenced the fact that these murders are happening in the same kind of theme, where there's like rulings of suicide or you know, like two people teamed up to kill someone, and it really should have struck me, and Metal Gear Solid 2 would have been a big help to figure out what was going on.
I don't understand. Was there a clone guy?
No, just the whole, like, artificial thing, like, reenactment, because, like, with Metal Gear Solid 2, a lot of the enemies, like, have tie-ins to enemies from the first game, and it was all, like, a VR program for Raiden to simulate, like, the events of Metal Gear Solid 1 to prepare him as, like, a better soldier for the present. So it was similar.
Honestly.
That kind of leads back to my complaint, though, that the game just lets slip too much too soon about what's actually going on. I mean, just the fact that Nagato actually asks you, like, three-fourths of the way through the game, hey, did you ever read this novel about this guy who thought he was doing good all the time, but in the end it turned out he was the villain? And then, like, 2 hours later, that's exactly what they end up revealing about all your characters. No one ever says, oh, I was just asking in these, without there being a story reason for it.
Yeah. I felt like the whole game was very back-ended, where all of the story came at the end, which it could be an argument of the first game, but I would say that the first game, it was there was stuff that would string you along, and maybe in the end it wasn't that important, but the whole time there'd be little revelations and, like, little clues towards what was going on, and then this game was just all mystery, and then at the very end it was like boom, 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 just constant revelations. And so it was good, like, you could piece it together and it was interesting, but it wasn't enough. Like, that's why from chapters, like, 1 through 4, I felt the game really dragged its feet, and then 5 and 6 were phenomenal, but it couldn't make up for how I felt.
Yeah, I remember really liking the third chapter where they had the dual murders, because I thought that was very cleverly done. But yeah, I thought the game didn't really hit itself until, like, chapter 5 or 6, the last couple ones. And incidentally, probably my favorite moment in that game is when all the characters from the first game start popping in the big final trial with Junko, or AI Junko. And my favorite moment is Bianca jumps in, and what's her name? Akane says, you know, he comes in. Junko says something that annoys Bianca. Bianca goes, "Shut up, you!" And Akane says something really stupid too. He says, "You shut up too."
And one for Jenny and the Whip.
Although Byakuya's best line with that is when they reveal the twist of, oh, by the way, we're watching everything on the cameras. And then Princess Sonya, all prim and proper, is like, I did things. Yes. Yes, you did.
Yes, I love that. Yeah, that was glorious.
On that topic of, like, this weird insinuation, I thought that, I don't know if I'm just, like, a prude or something like that, but it, even more than the first game, there was, like, weird stuff, like, that was, like, just, like, overtly sexual and weird, and especially with the nurse character, how she would fall, and that would be, like, these really weird, and then, like, Spread Eagle popped up on the screen, like, when she fell.
That really bothered
and then
me.
I was like, oh, this is gonna be something, like, her falling is gonna be something, which, like, very loosely leads to the verdict in the first trial, but really it was like those images and stuff like that really didn't serve a purpose except for weird fan service, and it was kind of gross.
Yeah, and it just turns out she had the worst execution in the entire game. It felt like it was going up to something that never actually happened.
Yeah, a lot of what happened with Mikan, though, is again something that gets paid off in the free time events, because apparently her backstory is that she's been abused and ignored so much that she has to basically act like a complete slut to get attention.
Oh.
Yeah,
that was something that I thought was gross too. I think, and I spoiled it for, I spoiled it on Twitter by accident, and so I'm still sorry about that. But I think it was like dealing with her and the like how she had like a stepfather or her mother's boyfriends would like get her to serve food without underwear, and it was just like I don't know, it just felt too real in terms of I don't know, it's so weird. You feel like such a jerk for a game that's about like high school students killing each other, but when someone's dealing with like incestuous behavior or being like turned out as like a weird like mild prostitute, it was like really gross, and that was probably like the worst part about the game that I thought was really weird and off-putting.
Yeah, I mean, let's get back to the issues of the characters. In the first game, a lot of the big surprise of the characters is you read into their backstories with the private times, you learn that they're not quite the person you think they are. There's more to them. In this one, they're so shallow that their big thing is, oh, look at my tragic backstory instead. Because they're just not that interesting otherwise.
You know, I don't know. For me, it sounds like a little bit the impact of some of these this type of game and everything, having a already tragic backstory to go over being tragic and stuff, it sort of becomes like, oh, well, yeah, that's just what happens to you.
Mm.
That's your life.
So, like, I've been, like, ragging on the game for a while now, but, like, I would like to know why this is, like, your game of the year so far.
It's a very tight race, we'll say, but I think what they did, especially in Chapters 5 and to a somewhat lesser extent, but still a pretty much an extent, Chapter 6, is probably the best casework they've done in this entire series. Granted, it's a short trip, but especially Chapter 5 with everything that they do to set up just how they have Nagito set up that murder, and they take the character who's basically been your brain for the whole game and it fits that she ends up being the killer for that.
Yeah, but
that was really impressive. I really like that. Yeah. The whole luck thing with him and is it Chiaki?
Yeah,
is that
Chiaki.
Her name?
Chiaki.
Yeah. Yeah, who was like my favorite. I made sure to get all her befriend her first. I thought she was really interesting.
Was I the only one though wondering why they couldn't just revive her after she was executed? Because she's an AI. She's a computer program. There's no reason they couldn't have brought her back.
I don't know. It made the ending much more
touching. The ending makes no sense. It is literally this Heart of the Cards bullshit about how, oh, if we try very hard and believe in our friends, we'll bring them back from a coma, even though they literally say they have a 1% chance of success, if that.
Now, granted, they do have the ultimate lucky student on their side, although I'm pretty sure if he's not already a heel in the third game,
another episode, so we don't, apparently that takes place in between one and two, so maybe that's him before he was captured, but...
And I think there was something, I actually just read it today for whatever reason, and that he's just referred to as like a butler or an assistant or something. He's not even referred to as Nagato, so it's unclear 100% if it's him or not. But it's interesting.
Is he a galaxy policeman?
He's got the hair for it.
I mean, that's the ultimate lucky guy.
We've been dancing around a little bit, Stephen, but just for your benefit, the big twist here is that all your characters are actually servants of Junko that were captured in the real world and then brought into this fake world to brainwash them into being normal people again.
Wait, did you say Junko?
Yes.
That's almost close to everything better at your Junas.
I see. Well, yeah, so the big thing here is that this is a fake world meant that once they, in the original program, if they win, that their new personas would be uploaded into their original bodies and they'd be normal again. Because they're all freaks of nature in the real world with like, this bugged me. This makes no sense. I realize it made no sense in the first game either, but... Is there anything left of Junko for people to surgically add to themselves? She was launched in a rocket, burned, spun around into little bits and pieces, hit with baseballs a million times, and smashed with a giant frickin' anvil. What do you think?
Well,
I have no idea. Someone also tried to have sex with her, so that's kind of weird.
No, that's wrong.
I want to know who it was.
That was probably Mekon, but it was also a localization, how can I put this, a liberty that Nisa took with it, because apparently in the original Japanese, she actually took Junko's womb and surgically implanted it into herself, which she could probably get away with because being the ultimate nurse and everything. But I think that basically means that none of the executions in the first game actually happened except maybe as a video. Because remember, they still have all those corpses in the freezer in the bio lab.
True enough.
So since for my benefit and everything, you guys are talking about the chapters as chapter 1, chapter 2, chapter 3, chapter 4, chapter 5. What? How would you refer to them if you couldn't use their chapter title and you just had to do it by the description? So like, the chapter where spiky hair was everywhere.
Let's see, clubhouse murder, beach house murder, hospital suicide, See, chapter 4, that'd be the fun house. Chapter 5 is the military base, suicide that was dressed up to look like a murder. And then the last chapter is the virtual reality final trial against Junko.
There you have it.
Simple, succinct, and to the point.
Mm-hmm.
Well, as to the point as this game can get.
Have any of you read the Danganronpa If?
I started reading it, but it bored me after a few minutes of going through it, and it goes on forever. What that is, for those of you who haven't gotten to it, is it's an alternate universe take on the first game. If the main character had pushed, Mokuro out of the way of the Spears of Gunyir, when she was originally executed, and he took the blow instead and was miraculously saved. And so she became a good guy.
Oh, interesting. Yeah, I haven't read it myself. It's just hard to find, to read something off the Vita screen. But I intend to print out the Danganronpa Zero thing. I think it's 80 pages at a size 8 font, so I'll get around to it eventually. But it seems pretty interesting.
Yeah, apparently that actually explains the whole mind-altering memory stuff that they do in both of the games.
Okay.
And there is a vague reference to a character in Zero in Danganronpa 2 as well.
Oh, cool.
Yeah. Although I did actually get through If in one sitting. It was a very slow night at work, let's put it that way.
Although your time is better spent with that than it is spent with Magical Miracle Monomy or whatever the hell they call that minigame. That is canon! It is important to the plot of the second game, and it is completely awful.
So, Donald, what puts 2 above 1? Because they both came out this year. So, do you think you consider 2 to be a better game than the first one?
I think, like I said, what they do with the plot, where they take what they did in the first game and then start completely twisting it in ways that I found to be really intriguing. It's a really close race. I mean, when I reviewed the game on the NWR forums, it's 89 and 90 were the scores. So it's very bare difference between the two of them.
Yeah, there's some fun jokes at the expense of the first game, like when Monokuma reveals in chapter 1 that they all had their memories erased. He said, "What, you thought we'd hold that? That would be really stupid."
I think I almost forgot that what really makes this a lesser game than the first one for me is that the minigames were either have terrible new ones, or they quote-unquote improved old ones, but even in naming it, improved Hangman's Gambit, and it's actually far worse, incredibly worse. And they just became these, mild little things that were really easy to get through in the first game to super long-winded ways to spell out a word.
I could not agree
with
you more on that, especially Hangman. Since not only did they make Hangman more annoying than it used to be, but they took away the little... they didn't used to give you the full word blanked out. They would give you bits and pieces of the word so you could figure it out. In this one, I failed that one about naming the, I think it was the Iron Skewer in the first one, because I wasn't sure what they were calling it. I mean, do you call that a kebab? Do you call that a spear? What do you call that? And eventually, as I poke you through, oh, Iron Skewer. Oh, of course, I'm supposed to figure that out on my own.
Did they give you the 4 and 6 spaces for that?
No.
Because I will admit, I live on Easy Street, I got my mail there, so I was playing it on Gentle, and they at least gave me 4 letters, 6 letters.
Oh, yeah, I played on Medium gives you nothing.
Oh, God. Yeah.
Because it's crazy, as Donald did, I played on Easy, the Gentle as well, so... A lot of the extra little added mechanics you miss out on, but I can't imagine... Sometimes things are already so frustrating that I can't imagine extra wrinkles being added on top of it. It would lose my mind. I don't know how you did it, dude.
Well, it took a lot of saving and reloading. But one thing that I think I've disagreed on the actual recording that we did, but I don't like what they did with the climax recap there. Because now that you're, searching out throughout the entire comic, trying to fit pieces in as they give them to you, I feel like you're not building that sequential order of events that it's meant to convey. Instead, you're doing a game. You're finding the thing, you're plugging into its hole, instead of saying, okay, in this first one, I want the thing that represents this. Even though they now tell you what the space is asking for and what the thing you have means, I just don't feel it's building a cohesive narrative experience.
Yeah, it just made it a lot easier having only four or five options instead of, like, the whole thing. It was so weird. Such a weird decision. And I never liked that anyways. I don't like the conclusion because generally right before that you've gone through it already. And so then you need to piece it together and then it goes step by step by step by step and you already know how it happened. And I've never felt it necessary at all. It was really weird.
Yeah, and they also changed how the little rhythm game that you play against the person that you need to deliver the final blow to. I don't know why they changed it from just depleting a health meter to like breaking shields now, but also that at the end, instead of just selecting the evidence and hitting them with it, you have to like figure out a term by piecing together pieces of a word, and you have, let's say, about 10 seconds to figure out what the order of the letters are, or else you have to start over. I just did not like that.
Yeah, and in most cases, it's, like, stupidly easy. But I remember, and I'll admit, the first one...
On the meat bone, or like, is it meat on the bone?
On the meat... Yeah. Meat on the bone. But I wrote it out. I had to write it out. Like, I wrote several variations. I just went through them because I had tried so many different ones. And I was like, what is this thing? And it was like, I still can't remember. I can't remember. It's like, yeah, like you're saying, it was on the bone, meat. I was like, is it on the bone, meat? Meat on the bone. It was like, there was a lot of variations that all made sense.
Or on the meat bone. But, yeah.
Yeah, on the bone meat. It was, like, so weird. But that one, every other one was, like, stupid. It would be, like, such a fragmented sentence. Of course you could know that you could see the order. But that one, it was like, four full words that I was, like,
well, that first trial was awful in general. I mean, there are way too many suspects, and I feel like they're pulling the kind of twist that you would pull in, like, a third or fourth trial, where instead of, like, the first one, where you're trying to ease people into how the game works now.
Yeah, all the glow-in-the-dark paint stuff really got to me, that it was like, especially that it was like put underneath the floorboards, so the person would just be like, oh, I should stab up here. Oh, it was so complicated, which I was surprised from for the first trial of the game. And even the rest of them, I never felt any other one was as complicated
as
that one.
Well, that sort of brings me to a point. What did you guys feel like that this was a expansion pack more than a separate game?
Yeah, the events in it are not important enough to be a real sequel to the first game.
And do you feel like, because what I'm hearing is that they sort of started the difficulty level with the assumption you played the first game, that they didn't need to.
You really have no business playing this game if you haven't played the first one, because so many of the elements are tied into the first game. You need that back.
Especially when you get to the final chapter and it all becomes about the events of the first game. Yeah, just to give you an idea, Steven says you didn't play it, but one of Junko's big plans here is one of the reasons she was having you kill each other is because these people aren't dead yet, it's just their avatars in the game. She wants to upload herself into all the people that were actually killed, and so then her AI persona becomes real people in the real world, and you're trying to stop that at that point. So it just feels like it's cleanup from the first game.
I'm surprised that this whole, like, virtual reality stuff is used as a plot device, because it's always something where, at the end of it, you're like, oh, so nothing mattered. Like, it's not like it's, like, inconsequential and that it's just a joke, but, I mean, you go through all this stuff and you're like, oh, it was all in a virtual world, it was all a game that someone was watching, so nothing's really moved forward. Narratively, it's kind of, you could have just, I don't know, it's always disappointing.
Yeah, Tyler, did you ever play a game called Star Ocean 3 Till the End of Time?
No.
That had the same plot twist, and it was even worse there. You play through an 80-hour RPG, and 60 hours in, it reveals that the entire game is a virtual reality simulation, and that none of it actually mattered.
There's another, I think Virtue's Last Reward did something.
Yeah, so I did like this game. I liked it quite a bit, though. It took me a while to warm up to it. But getting back to the minigames, the one minigame I liked that I'm kind of surprised that people didn't like so much was the logic dive. But then again, one of the first things I did in the game is I invested points into it because it was a new minigame, and I wanted to mitigate anything bad that would come of it. So I had pretty good turning and speed and everything to begin with.
Mm-hmm. It didn't really come, for me, it didn't come down to that. It just felt... I really like the story of the game, and to have these weird portions. It's like, you know, obviously they don't have the time or the or even the need to make it, you know, a good racing game or something. So it's very basic, and it's just another way to arrive at conclusions that the game has other ways to do the same thing just through conversation. So I thought it was a really weird decision, because there's other moments in the game where you just make simple decisions based off of four options, and you know, there's a timer going, but then this one is also a weird racing game that's not a very good racing game.
Yeah, so, I compared it in our original recording, that it was basically they took a look at Square Enix's mini game in Final Fantasy VII with the snowboarding one, and decided, yes, we must do that, even though that was an awful mini game in that.
Although I do have to give them credit, because I enjoyed Logic Dive. I like the new climax better. But with Logic Dive, it came down to, this was a chance for me to relax for a couple of minutes. Because they, for whatever reason, maybe it's just me, but I thought they had timed those perfectly. It's like, okay, you just chill out, watch out for the arrows at, you know, every 45 seconds or so. But other than that, you're going to have a couple of minutes to process what you're seeing and what's going on in this
game. Yeah, the one I got kind of tired of was the Fruit Ninja minigame, where you have to refuse
that
them.
By far, for me, is the worst one. It was so annoying.
Especially because it's not entirely clear how the Fruit Ninja aspect of it works until you play with a control stick. Because that's when you see, oh, you're supposed to wait for sentences to come out so you can get more of them at one time instead of trying to get them as they come out, or otherwise you run out of sword swipes.
Yeah, I had to... I talked to Alex Galafi from Nintendo World Report, because he did a review for another site for the game, so he beat it, and I was like, you just need to explain this to me. I don't understand what I'm supposed to be doing. Especially because it's like, here's the explanation, and you're like, okay, I think I got it, and then it just like throws you into it, and it's just like... And it tries to promote the touch controls, but those are, especially in that game, like, terrible. So I was just like, just jamming, and then you just end up jamming on the buttons to do your sword swipes to kill those words, but then all of a sudden the game takes a turn, and whenever there's the words where you're supposed to present evidence, if you hit those with your sword, it's like, if you cut them, it's like instant fail, and so then all of a sudden you're not supposed to be mashing on the...
But at the same time, there sometimes they'll present false ones to you that you have to let go, and they won't hurt you. Yeah, let's be honest, in general, the Danganronpa series is terrible at explaining their own minigames. That was a problem I had at the first one, too, when they first presented the rhythm minigame, because I felt like it goes on for like 5 minutes how to play it, and I had to play it to get an idea of what they were talking about.
Unfortunately, the guys who make these minigames are total trolls.
They are.
Because especially with when they changed up how the rhythm minigame worked. In the second game, it's like, really? You're doing this to me now?
Yeah, and yeah, I feel like we haven't done enough talking about the good parts of the game. I did really appreciate the quality of life improvements to it, like the fact that money is so much easier to get in this game than it was in the first game, and it's so much easier to get items to use in the free time events than it was in the first game. So it didn't feel like I often had a time where, okay, I need to go spend some free time, but I want to waste it without getting a level up, but I have nowhere to buy items from, so I'm just kind of stuck.
And making around your, that they gave you the option to kind of walk around, and they have extra little doodads and things to do. I grew disinterested. I'm not much of like a trophy person, so eventually I was like, okay, cool, my little Tamagotchi guy turned into something, and okay, now what? And so
yeah,
I stopped bothering.
I'm gonna be honest,
I did
platinum this game. It's actually my 100th platinum. In the process of getting that, though, it had me delve into a lot of stuff I wouldn't ordinarily play, like the school time stuff, you know, with island mode and with the terrible, Monami minigame and stuff like that. And I feel like if I just stopped playing at the parts where Donald played, I probably would think of the game much higher than I did. But because I played all this extra stuff that you're meant to play, it fell out of my top five pretty quickly.
I didn't partake in any of that extra stuff. I just played the game, and then that was it. I feel like, especially with the after, it was just the same with the first game, with like the after school kind of stuff, where you can talk to the people that may have passed away or you just didn't get to. Basically, like in both games, I talked to the people that I liked, and conveniently enough, it was always people that survived long enough that I got to see all their stuff, and so I didn't care about talking to anyone else. Like, I just did not want to. I was like, okay, cool, whatever. And I never, I,
you're really lucky with that, because every person I talked to died.
Yeah.
I know, that would really suck. And if I did talk to him, it would be right before, like, the team leader guy, the guy that became a robot.
Nakamura.
Yeah, I became friends with him as the robot in that chapter. That was the first time I ever spent talking to him. So I lucked out there. Basically, because at that point, it was the only other character that I cared about. It's just, in the first one, I went for the gamer, and then I think I went for, what's her name? Shit. She's like a samurai. She just because she made me think of the girl from the first game. Pekko, yeah. I went with her, and then I talked to her. So I don't know. I just go with whoever I think is coolest, and then I guess I just always luck out.
Yeah, it's actually funny you should mention Nakamura, because the moment that he reveals that clock component to him, I just said, you're going to die. That's obviously going to be important, or they wouldn't be showing us that you have a clock.
Oh, that was too bad that they showed that, especially when he was like, and it can't be changed. Like, no one can change
it. You might as well have bolded that and put it in giant purple Nintendo lettering.
Yeah, it was disappointing, especially for how the other ones. I don't know about you guys. Maybe you guys can read into things better than I can. But I was never like, oh, this is the next person to die for sure. That was the only time where you're like, oh, this is too weird a detail.
Yeah. Speaking of weird moments, how about the chapter 2 trial where the whole thing revolved around Monokuma having a video game where you play out a crappy Sega CD survival horror game that was meant to reveal something that happened in real life? That's kind of esoteric.
I really like that. I think at the time that you were doing chapter 1 and you're like, oh, this 2D stuff, like, they really doubled down on it. And that's when I wasn't saying that chapter 2 was, like, super better, but I was saying that at least there's something coming that's very different. And it was, like, a Saturn game.
Yeah,
or something.
Like, they doubled down on the 8-bit stuff in this game.
Yeah, but I like that game aspect of it, especially like it was the first time in the series where I felt like it was very creepy in the sense like when it was like you die and then it told you like it was like what was it dead 5 or 5 dead or down 5, it was something
down
weird.
5,
and that was a code that
you
was
had
really
to actually
smart.
Like press it down 5 times and then hit A.
Ugh, that was really cool.
Isn't that game based off a Suda 51 game or something? I seem to recall reading that somewhere.
Like, I mean, in terms of the aesthetics, it would look like Flower, Sun, and Rain. Like, just the really blocky, undetailed character models and stuff. But not that, like, well, there are other games I haven't played, but they're very different. Like, Silver Case Files are just, it's just, like, a lot of still images and, like, FMV and stuff. You didn't really control, I don't believe you control a character walking around and stuff.
We're running short. We're running close to the end of our time here, but really, did they do right by the old characters from the first game that they brought back in the final chapter?
I thought so. Although it was weird not to see the two other characters that we just saw, the three main. We didn't see Allie or Genocide Jack, for lack of a better term. But Genocide Jack is in another episode.
Yeah, so who knows what happens there. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And well, Hakagure was pretty much useless, so of course they could leave him out too.
I liked it. I didn't think it was cool to see that like their mission continued and that their story did wrap into this game, and that you can see that not necessarily where you can see where the story's going, but that there is something going on, that there's like this resistance group and stuff like that. So it was all right. It was pretty cool. I enjoyed seeing them. It was an interesting plot mechanic of having them have these people that they're trying to convert back to being normal people, even though that it was interesting because whatever group, I can't remember the name, but the group that they were working for was opposed to them trying to convert these people back to normal.
Or something like that.
Yeah,
future,
I thought that
future
was interesting.
Foundation.
Yeah.
So it seems like they're going rogue from even this group that is trying to make things better. So it's interesting to see if they're still going to be part of that group or what happens in the future.
So do we? Another episode's out. Hopefully, NIS America is pleased enough that they can bring that over. Although there's some things they're probably going to have to change if some of the things I've heard are accurate. But do we think they go to a Danganronpa 3? And do we see it?
They can't do this story again. They can't do another courtroom-based Danganronpa. This game kind of made it clear that they were running out of ideas to make that interesting.
I think that they can do a Danganronpa 3 as long as people don't prescribe to the notion that Danganronpa is this. This is Danganronpa is a trial based game, because it would be silly to have another event where you have to worry about, you know, these murders happening and stuff like that. I think it just the series has to move forward in a different way, like not like Ace Attorney where it's trial, and it's something that works because of the nature of the game. So hopefully people will be willing to see that, to be able to see a visual novel that didn't have these court cases and stuff, and maybe have some other mechanics.
They can't bring Junko back, even though her being an AI means they could. They need another villain if they're going to do this. But they would have to lose Monokuma.
Well, you could always adopt Monokuma, because he's just the symbol of the despair. And can I say for the record, I am sick of hearing about despair at this point between this and another game that I've played recently and another anime that I've watched.
It's becoming pretty popular. But I'd like to see the series move forward, and I don't even know. It sounded to me like like Spike Chunsoft has said that, oh, you know, if they can think of something, they'll move forward with it. So it's like this weird tease where you're like, well, wait, you haven't started already? And these are PSP games, and the Vita game, I don't know necessarily if it's the same team or something, but I mean, it seems like a game of a very different nature. So, what's been going on?
I'll just say this. I'm reading through the Wikipedia entry for the characters in another episode, and I'm seeing stuff about the Warriors of Hope and a demons hunting game, so they might be doing something there. But one thing I do appreciate about both the Danganronpa games is I kind of feel like you can finish both of them and feel like there's no more that you need to tell with this story. Because even though the story Danganronpa 2 is ultimately pointless, it does show that the characters of the first game got along all right. So I don't feel like you need to go into what happened in the real world, but you know, maybe another episode will show that we need another game, so we'll see.
Yeah. And Steven, I'm guessing we can't get you into this game at this point. We've said too much.
Look, I had those save issues the first time and stuff, and wasted so much time for so little game and everything, and this one sounds worse that way. I'll just read it and watch videos and stuff. Sort of like the same way I am with Metal Gear Solid, since we've already mentioned that.
Yeah, Tyler, just so you know, he didn't know that you could save at any point in the first game. So he only saved at save points.
Oh my god. And the save points are what? At the beginning of a trial? Like the
beginning and end of a trial.
Beginning to the beginning of the trial? That's crazy. That would be a very long lot. Oh my god.
Yeah. I kind of feel like I wish the game actually had taken you up on that first question to ask you. When the first trial breaks at the halfway point, Monokuma actually asks you if you'd like to risk your save on guessing who the real killer is in that episode. And if you're wrong, he'll delete your save. I kind of wish they had actually done that.
I think I was too nervous and opted not to take the chance.
I went for it, and he said, no, we're not going to do that.
I know. I was like, how serious? I don't know. It was weird. Because I didn't think it was that far in the game. I was like, maybe maybe they'll unlock some sort of fast-forwarding thing or something. But I didn't want to chance it.
Yeah, mind you, I played through Nier, a game where the last ending requires you to delete your save file in order to win.
All of your save files. So that's Danganronpa 2. It's available now. Definitely check to make sure you play the first one. Hopefully you grabbed it when it was on sale a few weeks ago, and maybe it'll get on PS Plus at some point. But Tyler, thanks very much for coming out tonight. Where can people find you on the internet?
Oh, they can find me at stickitinyourpocket.com. It's like a handheld gaming website. And then on Twitter is at Tyler Olu, OHLEW.
It's always good to hear you on an it's always good to hear you on an NWR podcast. If you'd like to hear us here, Austin, Steven, and myself talking about games that aren't court-based visual novels, we are the Nintendo Free Radio podcast. We're at bit.ly/NFRadioPodcast. We're on Twitter at NFR Podcast. I'm at Donald Mick.
I'm at Sarek B.
I'm at BrewBoar64.
And till we meet again,